This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For over a decade, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring third-party research on a broad range of public management issues facing us today. Whether by law, mandate, mission, or values, public managers at all levels of government are expected to engage citizens in a wide variety of issues. Such expectations will continue to grow, given the calls for more participation in government. Perhaps the most notable call was President Obama's 2009 Open Government Memorandum and Open Government Initiative, which were aimed at increasing public participation in federal decision-making. The Obama administration's Open Government Initiative is now 3 years old, but is it making a difference? The IBM Center for the Business of Government has issued reports that highlight best practices and plans in the major federal agencies, but do not explore the effectiveness of these initiatives until now. How can public managers evaluate whether their citizen participation projects and programs are effective? What can public managers do to assess whether their efforts are making a difference? And how does program evaluation factor into all of these efforts? Today, we will pull back the veil on how best to evaluate citizen participation with Dr. Tina Nabachi, assistant professor at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University and author of the recent IBM Center report, A Manager's Guide to Evaluating Citizen Participation. Tina, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Tina, the goal of your report is not only to increase public managers' understanding and ability to evaluate citizen participation, but it also focuses on producing results. Given your research, I'm particularly interested in understanding what is citizen participation?
Well, sure. Citizen participation is an umbrella term for a huge variety of processes that seek to engage the public, average citizens, on some kind of public issue. So broadly, we can think of citizen participation as being a myriad of processes by which we try to understand public concerns, needs, and values, and incorporate those into decision-making.
So, Tina, as you point out, citizen participation can take many forms, but for our purposes, it is an instrument for understanding public concerns, needs, and values, and incorporating those into decision-making. I'd like to better understand the certain key factors that make up citizen participation. Could you outline key factors in this area?
Absolutely. Well, citizen participation, first of all, it can happen in many different places. We see civil society organizations using citizen participation processes. We see citizen participation in electoral, legislative, and administrative arenas. It can also vary depending on a number of features. So, for example, size. Some processes are very small and range have just a few participants. Others have hundreds or thousands of processes. And with the development of online technologies, we now have the potential to involve millions of citizens in discussions about issues. Processes also vary based on their purposes and their goals, what they're designed to do, why they're being used. So, for example, it could be used to generate understanding about an issue, resolve disagreements about an issue, create collaboration around something to help make decisions. Participation also varies depending on who is there, whether it's expert administrators or professional or lay stakeholders, other processes involved, diffuse members of the public. How participants are brought to the table varies, how they're recruited and selected for these processes, the type of communication modes we use in participation also differ. Some processes happen face-to-face, others happen online or remotely, and some processes use a combination of those participation mechanisms. We also have some processes that have official names and are even trademarked, but others don't use named methodologies. And then finally, participation can vary depending on where it's occurring, whether those intended actions or outcomes are supposed to be at the organizational or network level, at the neighborhood or community level, at some kind of governmental level, and how processes are designed to connect to the policy process, connect to decision makers. Some have explicit connections and seek to inform public policy, while others have no connection to policy and decision makers, and instead they seek to create individual change or group action.
So, Tina, your recent report for the IBM Center for the Business of Government, A Manager's Guide to Evaluating Citizen Participation, focuses on the evaluation of direct citizen participation in public administration. I'd like for you to define for me direct citizen participation and outline some of the processes your report focuses on.
Sure. So another way we can think about the differences between participation is whether it's indirect or direct. So when we think about indirect participation, this is when citizens work through some kind of representative who makes a decision for them. So you can think about voting, right? We vote for an elected official who becomes our representative and makes decisions on our behalf. Or when we work through an advocacy group and give money, for example, to the World Wildlife Foundation, they go off and do the protection of the environment work. I don't personally have involvement in that besides supporting that organization. Direct participation is different, though. Direct participation occurs when citizens are personally engaged, when they're actively involved in the process of decision making, when they're doing it themselves. So direct participation is when members of a society, those who don't hold administrative positions in government, are sharing power with public officials, agency managers, elected officials, in making substantive decisions about a particular issue or set of issues. And in this report, I'm focusing on direct citizen participation in public administration. So those processes that are organized or used by government agencies that involve some kind of interaction between the agency and everyday citizens.
Tina, I think your report does a wonderful job of setting the context around the increasing prevalence of citizen participation today. I also found your report was interesting and referenced core values. To doing this, would you highlight some of those values? But more importantly, why is direct citizen participation in public administration so important?
Well, direct citizen participation is important because it is a foundation of democracy. You know, we have traditionally focused on indirect participation through voting. And when you look at kind of the history of democracy and the development of democracy in the United States, the focus of participation was on guaranteeing the rights of all citizens to vote for representation in government. And once those rights were firmly established, then the discussion about citizen participation began to change, and we tried to figure out how we can involve citizens directly in the day-to-day activities of government. And so the core values of the International Association for Public Participation, or IAP2, they focus on how we can engage the citizenry in day-to-day activities. So there are several core values. The first is that public participation is based on the belief that those who are affected by a decision have a right to be involved in the decision-making process. And again, this is a core and foundational value of democracy. If we accept that value, then IAP2 also says that those who are affected by a decision or interested in a decision should be sought out, and their involvement in that decision-making process should be facilitated. So if we're making important decisions but that have effects on certain groups or certain populations, and we're leaving them out of that decision-making process, then we're undermining one of the tenets of democracy. We also need to think about including the promise that the public's contribution will somehow influence the decision. So we want public participation, and the input of the public to have some meaningful effect on what comes out of participation. And that doesn't always mean that what the public says should go, that this should be the 100% definitive solution to the particular problem. Instead, that means that the voice of the public has to be meaningful, and it has to be incorporated or at least thought about in the final decision. And if we don't do what the public says, then we need to explain why. Another value is that how the public input affected the decision needs to be communicated to the public. If we tell them that we are just gathering their feedback to help us inform our governmental decision-making, the public will be willing to accept that. We just need to explain to them how and why we're using their ideas. Finally, we need to focus on the needs and interests of participants instead of focusing just on positions. So in conflict resolution theory, we say positions are what a person or group wants. Interests are why a person or group wants something. And when we focus on interests, we begin to expand from an either-or situation to a yes-and situation. So we're creating more options for creative resolutions to particular problems. And then finally, the last value is that public participation should provide participants with the information they need to engage in a meaningful way. So one of the big criticisms of public participation is, frankly, that the public is ill-informed, that they don't understand the policy process, that they don't understand technical issues of decisions. And my research shows, and other research shows, that the public can give meaningful input on very technical decisions as long as they're given the tools and the information to understand what is going on.
Tina, citizen participation can have many goals. I'd like you to highlight some of the key goals around this area. How critical is it when determining goals that public managers be mindful not only of their needs, but the needs of all of the stakeholders that are involved?
And I would say before I talk about those goals that the number of factors that I talked about earlier that citizen participation varies by, we need to think about designing participation to achieve those goals. So we can use citizen participation to inform the public, just simply to let citizens know about issues, changes, resources, policies, problems that the government is trying to address. We can use citizen participation to help citizens learn about a topic, learn about a problem, learn about specific issues, whether those are at a community or neighborhood level, even to the federal or international level. We can use citizen participation to transform conflicts, to help improve relations among groups, to help resolve disagreements about public policy or public actions. We can use participation to generate feedback so that we understand how citizens perceive an issue, how they perceive a problem or policy. We can use it to help get new ideas, creative suggestions, and alternatives for addressing an issue or policy. And similarly, to gather information from citizens about their perceptions, their concerns, their needs, their values, their interests, and so forth. Public participation can be used to help us identify problems about current issues, potential future issues, things that might be emerging on the horizon. We can use participation to improve a community's ability to address issues, to build the capacity of a community and community leaders to solve problems on their own. We can use participation to bring groups and people together to collaborate on addressing an issue. We can use participation to make decisions to help us arrive at judgments about problems, alternatives, and solutions. Even though there is this huge breadth of goals, we have to make sure when we're designing participation that we are designing it to achieve those goals. And so we have to be mindful as public managers not only of our own needs, but also the needs of our allies, of our stakeholders, of citizens. And you have to be aware of those when you're designing, to know what you want to achieve, to know what others want you to achieve. And being aware of that helps you generate buy-in. It helps you gain the consideration and the buy-in of other people.
So stepping back a bit, I wanted to know what prompted your research in this area. Would you tell us more about how you conducted the research for the report and who participated and why?
Absolutely. So prior to doing work in citizen participation, I focused on issues of conflict resolution in government, and so how agencies use various dispute resolution techniques to resolve problems. And that kind of naturally evolved into research on collaborative governance, and then from there into citizen participation, which was the focus of my dissertation research, and I would say the primary focus of my research right now. I think there are very clear and important connections between alternative dispute resolution, collaborative governance, and citizen participation. So collaborative governance focuses on inter-organizational issues. Alternative dispute resolution focuses on intra-organizational issues. And citizen participation is really extra-organizational. But all of these are tools, techniques, processes that are hopefully used for improving the work of government and governance. So there are really logical connections in my research in these three streams. To do the research for this report, I built on my knowledge of alternative dispute resolution and collaborative governance and recognized that really evaluation of alternative dispute resolution, or ADR, has many of the same problems and difficulties as evaluation of public participation. Both of these occur in many different arenas. They encompass a wide variety of tools, techniques, and processes. They have different meanings of success for different parties, and they can be evaluated using a very wide array of tools, methodologies, measurement tools. So for this report, I reflected on my own work on evaluating alternative dispute resolution in the federal government. I also reviewed and adapted protocols, procedures, and recommendations from the Federal Interagency ADR Working Group. I talked with scholars and practitioners about their own work in public participation, how they were evaluating it, where they felt the gaps were. And then I used my own insights from my research, from my teaching, and from my training in this area to come up with some tools, some frameworks that would be useful for public managers who are doing participation in a huge array of areas.
What is program evaluation, and how can it assess the impact of citizen participation programs? We will explore this question and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. How do we lead in an era of complex challenges? What does USDA do to promote the country's agricultural production and exports? How is EPA incorporating sustainability into its regulatory decision-making? What is the military health system's quadruple aim? And how is New York City leveraging technology to deliver human services? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guest today is Tina Novaci, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Manager's Guide to Evaluating Citizen Participation. Tina, you did a wonderful job in the last segment of describing the phenomenon of citizen participation, what it exactly is and how important it is to public administration. But your report also focuses on evaluating actual programs, citizen participation programs. For our listeners, what is program evaluation, and would you outline the basic steps of program evaluation?
Sure. First, I will say program evaluation is so important. It is how we know if what we're doing is successful, if it's effective, if it's achieving what we intended it to achieve. So we can think about evaluation research as the systematic application of social science research procedures for assessing the conceptualization, design, implementation, and utility of intervention programs. And we do program evaluation on almost every issue in public administration, from education policy to environmental policy to transportation. We try to think about whether what we're doing is achieving its intended effects. And so it's really important to also evaluate citizen participation. So there are five basic steps of program evaluation. The first step, obviously, is pre-design planning and preparation. And this is the most important step. It helps us figure out what we want to achieve with our evaluation, how much time, money we want to spend, who we're going to work with, and who's going to be interested in the evaluation. So it's setting up the goals for evaluation, and everything else connects back to this planning and preparation stage. The second step in program evaluation is to actually design the evaluation to figure out what we're going to do in light of our goals for the evaluation. So we need to develop research questions, measurable performance indicators, figure out our design strategy, and determine how we're going to collect data based on what's available to us and what we need. The third step is to actually do the evaluation, to implement it, to take the steps necessary to make sure we're collecting high-quality data and that we are collecting that data and storing it in a way that we can analyze it. Then you do the data analysis in the fourth step. You interpret those results. You try to figure it out in a way that matches with your overall evaluation design. And then finally, we need to write the evaluation report and distribute those results. So we have to think about what results need to be communicated and to whom those results need to be communicated. We try to determine the best methods for communicating those results, whether it's in a report or, maybe a YouTube clip or some kind of a presentation. We prepare those results in an appropriate format, and then we disseminate them. We share with others what we have learned.
Tina, what are some of the common evaluation design strategies?
Absolutely. There are numerous ways to do designs. One strategy is to use a case study where we focus on one or more cases. In this context, it would be a case where participation was used. And this helps us get detailed descriptions about what happened in the process and what the outcomes were of participation. We can do a time series design where we're collecting information over a certain time span. This helps us to assess whether there are changes in certain indicators over time. We can use quasi-experimental designs where we use naturally occurring groups, for example, those who participated in a program and those who did not. So this helps us to assess whether outcomes are the result of participation or something else. We can also use an experimental control group design, and this is where we select individuals and randomly assign them to participate or not participate in the program. And this really helps us ensure that the outcomes we're seeing are a result of the program and not a result of something else. And then within those categories, there are numerous differences and numerous subtle types, but I would say that those are the major categories of evaluation strategies.
So as I understand it, Tina, evaluations are important because they are used to judge the merit or worth of a program and can yield numerous benefits for agencies. Evaluating citizen participation has interrelated benefits. I'd like for you to highlight some of those key benefits.
Well, in my mind, the biggest benefit to evaluating citizen participation is that it helps us learn what works where, when, why, and how. And ultimately, that knowledge will help us improve citizen participation in the work of government. But citizen participation has numerous other benefits. For example, it can help with accountability. You know, the public, elected officials, agency personnel, stakeholders, they all want to know if the programs that are being funded with tax dollars are actually having the intended effects. And answering this accountability question can only be done through evaluation. So evaluation helps provide a mechanism of quality control. Evaluation can also help public managers monitor and improve the implementation and management of their programs. It can give us a fresh look at programs, identify areas for program improvement. It can help us track changes over time. And all of this can help managers determine whether a program should be modified, expanded, continued, or canceled. We also are in an era of resource scarcity. So evaluation can help us determine whether public monies and resources are being used appropriately and efficiently. So this information can help us justify programs when those programs are at risk of being cut or scaled back. It can help us identify costs and benefits of public participation, whether participation saves time and money. Public participation is also mandated under numerous laws. So evaluation can help managers determine whether their public participation programs are adhering to and meeting the intentions of those various pieces of legislation. It can help with ethics. It can help managers make sure that programs have fair and appropriate representation, that participants understand the impacts of their contributions, and that programs are fostering democratic values such as transparency, accountability, legitimacy. When we do evaluation right, it can help build ownership of problems, of processes, of outcomes, both within the agency and outside of the agency. So evaluation can demonstrate to allies, to stakeholders, to citizens, that the agency is interested in conducting participation and improving those processes. And that can help generate interest among outside groups to assist with the evaluation. And then finally, from an academic perspective, I would say that evaluation can also help us with research and theory. So it can help us improve the study and practice of participation. Most of the research on participation is dealt with questions about scope. Who participates? How many participate? How is participation structured? But we've had less research on questions about quality. Is participation effective? What are its impacts? What are its outcomes? And answering these questions can only be done if we begin to evaluate public participation processes in a systematic way.
Your report outlines two types of evaluations that are relevant for assessing citizen participation. I'd like for you to describe the two types of evaluations that you focus in on in your report, and more particularly, what are the differences between process and impact evaluations?
Sure. Those names are actually, they're a little bit misleading. A process evaluation really focuses on implementation and management, but an impact evaluation focuses on the outcomes and results of a program. So I would say that the easiest way to understand the differences is that process evaluation answers the what question. What is the program intended to be? Does the program match its design? And impact evaluation answers the so what question. What are the outcomes of this program? What are the results of the program? Is it achieving its intended objectives? So with a process evaluation, we're focusing on inputs and outputs to better understand how a program is being implemented and managed and where and how that implementation and management can be improved. With an impact evaluation, we're focusing on the outcomes, on the results, so that we can determine whether a program produced its intended effects. Process and impact evaluations, they also vary on how they're used. So, for example, process evaluation is really identifying areas for program development and improvement, whereas impact evaluation is to see whether it's achieving its intended goals and outcomes, whether it's worth its costs, how we might modify, expand, or eliminate the program. And then both types of evaluations have different types of audiences who are likely to be interested. Because process evaluation focuses on implementation and management, it's most likely to be of interest to program managers, to staff, to other agency officials. The results of an impact evaluation are likely to be of interest to a wider variety of audiences, so not just those within the agency, but also legislators, elected officials, academics, researchers, practitioners, those who participated in the program, and just kind of the general citizens.
Tina, your report is a manager's guide, and it offers very practical insights. What are the three most important questions to keep in mind when conducting a process evaluation? And could you outline the key evaluation areas, main questions, and most important data sources to properly conducting such an evaluation?
Sure. So when you're conducting a process evaluation, you're focusing again on the management and implementation of your citizen participation project or program. So you want to ask three important questions. What is the program intended to be? What are we delivering with this program in reality? And then what are the gaps between program design and delivery? When we think about process evaluation, there are at least five areas that we need to look at. One is program organization. So this is really looking at the design and assessing things like whether the program is implemented and operates as it was designed. Do we have the appropriate directives, guides, and standards for program administration? Do the staff and participants understand their responsibilities? Are we giving them enough information to enable smooth operation? Do we have the right numbers of staff? Are we creating working relationships? Another area we can look at is service delivery and how we are actually delivering the public participation program. So we want to look at things like access. Who are neutrals or the facilitators who are moderating the participation process? Do people understand the process that's being used? Are we using it on the right issues? We can also look at things like general outputs or process-specific outputs and specific program features. For the data, a lot of this can just be gathered within the program. So we can set up simple archival databases. We can talk to the personnel, the staff who are running the program. We could also talk with participants, other stakeholders. So collecting data on this is primarily internal. It comes from the staff and the information you already have.
Tina, one of the things you really try to achieve in this report was to make it usable for public managers, and you do it by illustrating key concepts through specific case studies, and I found it very useful. Your report identifies efforts in both Pinellas County, Florida, and the Seattle Neighborhood Planning Program. Would you elaborate on these two case studies?
Well, one of the things I really tried to achieve in this report was to make it usable for public managers. And so I wanted to illustrate a lot of the concepts by giving them quick examples of how others had done program evaluation. So throughout the report, there are a bunch of examples. One of them that you mentioned was done by the Metropolitan Planning Organization in Pinellas County, Florida. And they had designed a citizen participation process with the goal of keeping the public informed about its activities. So they wanted the public to know what the planning organization was doing and how it was doing that. So to evaluate their information activities, they built a lot of mechanisms directly into their website so that they could collect data on several different indicators. So, for example, how many hits were there on the website? How many times were relevant documents or maps downloaded or viewed? They created a pop-up survey on the web so that they could understand how citizens stayed informed about the planning organization's activities. They also developed and implemented an internal tracking system so that they could capture data about their public outreach events. So they just created a very simple user interface in which staff members record data about events. For example, the title of the event, the date, the location, how many people attended. And right now, the Metropolitan Planning Organization is working to develop mechanisms to track how many comments are received from the public and how those are handled. So this is an example of just a really simple mechanism where they could count information, collecting counting information. Another example was the Seattle Neighborhood Planning Program, and this one was really interesting. So in 1994, Seattle created a neighborhood planning program that encouraged citizens to participate in the planning for the growth of the city. And by 1999, over 16,000 citizens had participated in this planning process over 38 different neighborhoods in the city. And so the city was really struggling to understand why some participation efforts were seen as being effective while others were not. They wanted to identify the barriers to participation, how participation could be used in the future, whether participation was inclusive, accessible, and open to all citizens. So they decided to evaluate their process. And their process was really neat because not only did they work with an interdepartmental staff team and an outside consultant, but they also talked to citizens who were active in the participation process, and they got input on their evaluation design from them. They held a public forum to present the results of their evaluation before finalizing that report. So there was participation not just in planning, but also in the evaluation process itself. And they used multiple sources of data, so it was a much bigger example of a process evaluation. So they had archival data that they obtained from city staff. They did a mail survey to participants. They did interviews with city staff, citizens, and people in other cities that had neighborhood-based participation efforts. And what they found by doing this was that they were able to understand why, where, and how the citizen participation processes in Seattle were working, and to identify ways to figure out how to improve citizen participation, how to make participation more effective. So in both cases, both of those examples, one is very simple, one is a little bit more complex, but both evaluations provided the organizations useful information about their participatory processes, how they were being managed, how they were being implemented, and what could be done to improve them. And that's really the point of process evaluation.
What are the three most important questions to keep in mind when conducting an impact evaluation? We will explore this question and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. How do we lead in an era of complex challenges? What is DOD doing to change the way it does business? How is EPA incorporating sustainability into its regulatory decision-making? What does USDA do to promote the country's agricultural production and exports? And how is New York City leveraging technology to deliver human services? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guest today is Tina Novaci, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Manager's Guide to Evaluating Citizen Participation. Tina, as you point out, process evaluation focuses on the what question, while impact evaluation focuses on the so what question. There are several challenges that complicate performing impact evaluations and make them generally more difficult. Could you outline some of those challenges?
Well, process evaluation is primarily internal. It's looking on what is going on in the implementation and management of the participation process. But impact evaluation becomes a little bit more external because it's focusing on the outcomes, on the results. And one of the challenges is that impact evaluations obviously can only be done once a program has been implemented. And this is a challenge in participation because many of the effects of participation take time to come to fruition. For example, if we're trying to change public policy, we all know that public policy doesn't change overnight. It takes time for those changes to happen. And so the longer it takes for those changes to occur, the more challenging it is to connect it to participation. Another challenge is that impact evaluations presume a set of defined objectives, a set of criteria for success. They assume that there's a definition of effectiveness, and that's not always the case. What's effective or perceived as being effective for one audience might be different for another. And then a final challenge is that it's hard to know what the counterfactual would be. That is, it's hard to know what the outcomes would have been in the absence of participation. And so all of those challenges make it very difficult to assess the results or the impacts of a public participation process.
Despite these challenges, this type of evaluation can generate valuable information. So would you tell us about the types of information derived from a properly conducted impact evaluation?
Sure. The focus of impact evaluations is on the so what question. What is working? What is not working? So by doing an impact evaluation, we can improve program effectiveness. We can learn the answers to questions about whether a program is achieving its intended goals or it's changing its intended outcomes, whether the program has different impacts across different groups, or whether those impacts vary over time. We can learn about positive or negative unintended consequences or effects of the program. We can help determine whether the program is effective in comparison to alternatives. Was it effective using participation? Is that more effective than if we hadn't used participation? Impact evaluations can help us figure out whether a program is worth what it costs. And so with all of this information, managers can then prioritize the actions that they want to take with citizen participation processes, and they can make informed decisions about whether to modify, expand, replicate, or eliminate a particular program. Because of all of these benefits, impact evaluations, as I said before, are likely to be of value to a wide variety of audiences, not just program managers, staff, and other agency officials, but also elected officials, academics, researchers, practitioners, program participants, the general public. All of those audiences are likely to have an interest in answering the so what question.
So keeping in line with your report, which is a very practical guide, I want to understand the three most important questions that someone who may engage in an impact evaluation would want to keep in mind before they actually perform it. Could you also outline the key evaluation areas, main questions, and the most important data sources to properly conduct an impact evaluation?
The first question is, what works and what does not work? And then a second question is, where, when, why, and how do certain elements work? And the final important question to keep in mind is, what are the costs of the overall program and these specific elements? When we think about doing impact evaluation, there are lots of evaluation areas, but I think the main ones are efficiency. We want to know the costs to the agency and the participants, the time for the agency, the time for participants. A second area is program satisfaction or participant satisfaction. So how satisfied are the participants with various aspects of the program? We want to evaluate on several general outcomes. For example, what are the benefits or the outcomes of participation for individuals? What are the outcomes of participation for communities, for the agency, and for public policy or public action? We would also like to evaluate on process-specific outcomes. There's a huge variety in the design of public participation processes, so we want to evaluate outcomes that are specific to the objectives and designs of a particular participatory program. We can collect data from a huge variety of sources, from archival data that we collect throughout the participation process, from personnel. But I would say the biggest difference here is that we need to collect more data in impact evaluations from participants and from stakeholders. So there are lots of potential sources for conducting impact evaluations.
Tina, your report does a wonderful job of breaking down somewhat academic concepts and making them seem very understandable and very practical. And one of the ways you do this is by identifying specific case studies. And one of the case studies I'd like for you to focus in on is the America Speaks 21st Century Town Meeting. Could you tell us more about this case study?
Well, the 21st Century Town Meeting is a large-scale participatory process that America Speaks runs. And in this process, they seek to engage a demographically representative group of citizens, anywhere from 100 people to 5,000 or more people, in simultaneous deliberation about a specific policy issue in a particular community. So one study looked at whether or not participation in this 21st Century Town Meeting affected perceptions of internal and external political efficacy. So internal political efficacy asks the question, do people believe that their voice matters in politics? And external political efficacy asks, if I give my input, will the government listen? So it's a question about the responsiveness of government. Scholars and advocates of public participation say that one of its primary benefits for individuals is that it increases their perceptions of internal and external efficacy. So this study tried to determine whether that was true, whether participation actually had these effects on political efficacy. So it was a longitudinal, quasi-experimental research study that collected data from participants in the 21st Century Town Meeting and a random sample of area citizens who did not participate in the meeting. And these surveys were administered before the event, immediately after the event, and then 2 years later to see whether changes held over time. And what was really interesting about this study, even though it did have some methodological limitations, it showed that the way America Speaks was recruiting citizens for this town meeting, that was happening in a way that was encouraging less efficacious citizens to participate. And that's in contrast to what we see in a lot of public participation. And the study also provided support for the argument that participation can increase political efficacy. External political efficacy increased in a statistically significant way, and internal political efficacy also increased. Basically, the study provided support for the idea that participation in these processes can help change the way citizens think about their participation in politics more broadly and the responsiveness of government.
So your report has another case study that it elaborates on. It's the Oregon Citizens Initiative Review. Could you tell us a little bit more about this initiative and the components of the program evaluation that was performed?
Sure. Well, this is a really neat process that began in 2010 in Oregon. So Oregon often puts issues on the ballot for referendum. And the House in Oregon decided that it needed to make sure that the electorate was aware of what was going on so that they could make informed and reflective judgments on these particular ballot measures. So they convened two separate panels for the Citizens Initiative Review, and they wanted to see what effect it was having. So researchers asked two questions. First, did the panels engage in high-quality deliberation? So they used observational data and before and after interviews with participants in the panel and staff, and they assessed the quality of the citizen statement. This was a statement produced by the deliberative panels and then made available for public viewing so that the public would understand what these particular ballot initiatives were. And they found that there was fair and respectful discussion throughout these panels, and that the statements were factually correct, and that they were free of logical errors. So deliberation here really helped produce high-quality understanding of these particular ballot initiatives. But then the researchers also wanted to know whether these statements that were produced by the panels helped Oregonians decide how to vote. So in order to answer this question, they conducted statewide telephone surveys, and they found that those who read the statements found the statements to be useful in deciding how to vote and becoming more knowledgeable about the issues. But in fact, the majority of Oregon voters weren't aware of the process and didn't read the statements. Even though people weren't aware of the process, broadly aware of the process, the state legislature found this to be really useful. And so there's been an agency created in Oregon now to continue the Citizens Initiative review process to help the public become more aware of ballot initiatives. So this evaluation really provided the legislature with important information about public participation on ballot initiatives.
So, Tina, that evaluation really provided the legislature with important information about public participation on ballot initiatives. What can you tell us about the multi-city Our Budget, Our Economy event as it relates to your research?
So this was a really large-scale process, also convened again by America Speaks. And the idea here was to bring the public together to talk about fiscal policy, fiscal reform, and to deliberate about the national economy, our national debt. In June of 2010, America Speaks convened more than 3,000 individuals in 19 communities across the United States. In addition, there were 38 volunteer-organized community conversations. So this was a very large-scale process, and this information was then given to professional policymaking bodies such as President Obama's National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform. So what was great about this evaluation was that it was built into the design of the event. So while they were planning the event, they were also planning how they would evaluate it to know whether it was successful. They used a lot of data here, participant surveys, site-based field reports, table-level keypad responses, control group surveys, elite opinion surveys, census data, media reports. Their evaluation was written by Kevin Esterling, Arkan Fong, and Taiku Lee. It's available online. And the evaluation report focuses on several issues, things like who participated, what did individuals think could be done to control the federal deficit, did participation change people's views, and how did those views change? Were participants' preference guided by their political ideology? Did it shape the way participants saw themselves as citizens and their proper role in government in addressing these policy issues? And so it was a really comprehensive evaluation, one that could serve as a really good model for public managers who want to evaluate their participatory efforts. And I think the most interesting piece that came out of this evaluation, at least for me, was that while participants began with kind of political ideology guiding their preferences, no matter if you were far left or far right on the political spectrum, participants were able to compromise and come to consensus about how particular elements of the budget should be addressed. So it really provides evidence that public participation can resolve these public policy disputes, that average citizens can come in and make informed decisions about very tough, very challenging issues, and find ways to come up with ideas and solutions to those problems that work for everybody.
What does the future hold for properly evaluating citizen participation? We will explore this question and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. What does the USDA do to promote the country's agricultural production and exports? How is EPA incorporating sustainability into its regulatory decision-making? What is the military health system's quadruple aim? How is the Maritime Administration working to enhance U.S. competitiveness? And what about DHS's acquisition and procurement strategies? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Hear from U.S. Deputy Secretary Kathleen Merrigan, David Matsuda, Administrator of the U.S. Maritime Administration, and Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs. Robert Hale and Beth McGrath provide us with their insights on how DOD is changing the way it does business and leading in an era of complex challenges. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guest today is Tina Nabachi, author of the recent IBM Center Report, A Manager's Guide to Evaluating Citizen Participation. So, Tina, public managers face real problems in this area. Would you identify the most prominent challenges to evaluating citizen participation programs?
There are so many. First, there are no comprehensive frameworks for analysis. We don't have agreed upon evaluation methods. There are very few reliable measurement tools. And this is in part due to other challenges. There's tremendous variety in the design and the goals of participatory processes. So if we want to have evaluation frameworks, they need to be general enough to apply across settings, across types of processes, but specific enough to have value for practice and for research. And this is even more complicated by the fact that sometimes we're evaluating a single participation process, whereas other times we're evaluating programs that involve a number of participatory activities spread over months or even years. Another challenge is that public participation is inherently complex and inherently value-laden. There are no widely held criteria for judging success and failure. So some advocates think that we should focus on the intrinsic benefits of participation. Others say we should focus on the instrumental outcomes, that is, what are the benefits for citizens, communities, policy, and governance. Critics doubt both sets of claims here. And so one challenge that managers face is it's impractical to evaluate across all of these outcomes. And yet what they decide to evaluate sends very clear signals about the goals of the program and the values of its managers. Another challenge is that program managers need to consider two different types of evaluations, process evaluations, which focus on program management and administration, and impact evaluations, which focus on program outcomes and results. While I would love to see both process and impact evaluations conducted, it's not always possible or practical to do so. Evaluation is interesting to a number of different audiences, but each of those audiences is likely to have different evaluation criteria to value different information. So what agency officials and program managers want is likely to be a little bit different than what scholars want or practitioners or average citizens. So we need to figure out ways to do evaluation to help all of those different audiences. I would also say that evaluation is generally a scary word. It's a word that provokes anxiety for people. It can be intimidating to do. It takes time, money, personnel, and other valuable resources that are often in short supply. And then I would just add one last thing, and that is that we've seen the growth of a tremendous number of online processes, partly in response to President Obama's Open Government Memorandum and Open Government Plan. So while we're seeing a lot of online processes blooming, we don't have any officially allowed or officially approved tools to evaluate those processes beyond mere quantitative counts of website traffic. So those are a number of the challenges that happen. I would just throw in there that often program managers, public managers, have concerns about evaluation. There are concerns that it diverts resources away from the program, that it's a burden for program staff, that it's too complicated, that it might produce negative results that would make the program look bad or make the program lose funding, and that it's really the setting of performance standards, and this is difficult in public participation, again, because it can mean so many things to different people. But despite all of those challenges, despite all of those concerns, I really believe that we need to do a better job evaluating our participatory programs so that we can improve our participation programs over the long term.
So, Tina, despite all of these challenges and concerns, you believe that we need to do a better job evaluating these programs. so that we can improve our participation programs over the long term. To that end, what are the next steps public managers can take to assess the performance of citizen participation programs?